Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Iadarola, and very excited to welcome back to the show contributor to Rebel HQ, Carolyn Johnson. Welcome back to The Damage Report.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Great to
back.
Have you here. Yeah, no, look, it's obviously always good to have you here, but on a day when my voice could give out at any second, I'm glad to have you here to pick up some slack. So get ready for that.
Of course.
Anyway, everyone, thank you for joining us too. We got a big news day. It was so big that we do this pre-show, the Damage Preport, every day before our full show. And stories that we couldn't fit into the full show go there. I couldn't fit everything into the pre-show. There's just too much going on. We've got more fun political violence and threats of future political violence. We've got bananas videos coming out of Hurricane Ian, which continues to batter the East Coast. This insane analysis that the New York Times did of phone calls that were intercepted, phone calls by Russian soldiers. Some of the stuff that they reveal about this invasion has been insane. And yes, we will be talking about the flute that broke the internet a little bit later on. If you're watching the full show, that'll be in the aftermath. So everyone stay tuned for that. In advance of that though, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that'd be very helpful so that people know we're live. And if you want to send any comments, tweets, super chats, compliments, words of encouragement to myself or Caroline, you could do that and we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Caroline, you ready to start the show?
Yeah, let's do it. I hope so, at least. There's a lot.
I hope so. Well, I mean, we're gonna, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So let's jump into this. We're on the precipice of more January 6th hearings, and we know that there's going to be some bombshells. They've said they have a lot of footage that we've never seen before that was delayed, of course, by the hurricane, but some footage has already been released. And as a reminder of exactly what was going on January 6th, take a look at this.
Are you in your cars doing nothing? And the way you're treating us.
That was the peaceful election fraud protest, as Tucker Carlson called it, that happened on January 6th. And I want to go to a screenshot that I took from that video. If we could bring this up, because I think this image really crystallizes the MAGA movement. These are people that back the blue, that love the cops, law and order, using a massive Trump 2020 flag banner thing as a battering ram to knock over a bunch of cops desperately trying to protect the government from them. And just seeing that Trump 2020 looming over these cops who are terrified of dying, and some of them will die in the next few days after that video was taken, I think that that just summarizes things so well. Now, this footage was released in connection with the sentencing of Howard Richardson, a 72-year-old who was sentenced back in August to 46 months in prison for attacking enforcement officers with this Trump flag. What's interesting is that he wrongly insisted that he was carrying a back the blue flag on January 6th and not a Trump flag. Now, I don't see what that distinction would matter, why it would matter what kind of flag you were trying to beat cops to death with. The idea that you want to make sure that they understand that you were using a pro-cop flag to kill them rather than a pro-Trump flag seems weird. But regardless, the footage is clear and it was used to help convict him. Caroline, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I have a little bit of static on my end. I hope people can't hear that. But
yeah, it was super fast. Behind the scenes, we're getting a ton of feedback. I don't know if someone's mic is live in the control room or something. If we just make sure everybody's... Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Cool. Just hope everyone can hear exactly what I'm saying, because it's very important. No, I'm kidding. But I think this idea that we keep coming back to in the analysis and video footage of January 6th is this constant reminder that Trump MAGA Republicans only care about the military and the police and, you know, their concept of America insofar as it confirms their own status and interest in like being macho, basically. Mm-hmm. I was covering a story about the rapper candidate J.R. Majewski yesterday, who, you know, has been caught in these lies about his military service, even though he did actually serve in a logistical role. And again, it just underscores this idea that people in this world do not actually care about the meaning behind the symbols that they hold so dear. They only care about it to push their political agenda and thus like absolve themselves of any real responsibility. They want all of the credit of standing with these symbols and these people and none of the responsibility of what it actually means to support your country and defend your country. So I think that, you know, I was skeptical of the January 6th hearings at the beginning. I was like, can we move past this? This was just like a crazy day that got completely out of control. But I think the committee is doing a really good job of their stated goals, which were to just very clearly lay out through video, visual evidence of what really happened that day and leave it up to us. And they've been doing a really good job of building, of adding to this narrative. And I think it's really hard. It's going to be really hard for people to look past videos like this and have any defense for it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the one thing that might make it a little bit easier to look past the video is if the video is never presented to them. If, you know, Tucker Carlson, of course, is not going to play these videos. He's not going to tee them up himself. He's never going to do, you know, live unfiltered coverage of the hearings too. I love when like, if they're out a bunch being spread on social media, that definitely helps. And you know, having more and more people being sentenced, in some cases only for a few weeks or time served, which you know, apparently for what they did was reasonable. Or in some cases, as this guy was, for literally years because he was trying to murder people is important. But I love your point about the symbols. Like I was trying to come up with other examples of people who really don't get the point of the symbol they're using, and it's difficult to. The only time I can think of it is there was a photo going around once. You know those signs people put on their lawn of like, in this house we believe women's rights are human rights and all this stuff, and it lists like 10 things. And I don't remember which one, if it was something about being trans or something, but it was Sharpied out.
Oh
like,
yeah.
No, but like, yeah. Don't put the sign up then at that like, point.
Yeah, no human being is illegal. I think it was that one.
Like I like women, but not the Guatemalans. I'm not a fan of them.
Exactly.
Take down the sign, honestly.
Just take down the sign. Yeah, you don't.
Exactly.
No one's forcing you to have the sign in front of your, like, yeah, the virtue signaling is out of control.
And I will say that, you know, when January 6th happened, we knew that there were going to be these big protests, okay? And there were certainly, there were some people that thought it could turn violent. I was very worried about what might happen in government, but I'm being completely honest, I didn't think that they would breach the halls of Congress. I didn't think people would literally die in this way. Mm-hmm. Even as it was beginning, I couldn't interpret it for what it honestly was because it seemed so impossible. And that's despite everything that we learned over the past, you know, half decade at that point. And now we're past one insurrection. There are so many more reasons to be worried about what is going to happen in future elections, particularly in 2024. And I wonder how many more people have been like, have been cleared of that naivete that even I had on the morning of January 6th. I hope that people are ready. Because if we're not ready, we're not going to take the precautionary measures that are necessary to stop another insurrection from happening.
Yeah, I think the difficulty there is like, once again, I think the hearings have done a really good job of laying out like how serious and how coordinated this was. The problem I see is that Republicans have done such intense work of sowing the seeds of discord in our election systems, that it's almost like they are putting in the work to like legitimize what happened on January 6th through our upcoming elections. And that's what really scares me. It's like we, you know, again, the committee can do a great job of really leaving their personal beliefs aside and showing us the video evidence. And yet it just seems like the Republicans are, they aren't really like playing that game. Where they're doing it is at the local level in different election offices. And that's what, you know, it's crazy, but it seems like this might be further emboldening them. Like, oh my gosh, this almost worked in a way, which
maybe
is just terrifying.
Yeah, okay, that's an extra new worry that I have to have. Thanks a lot.
Anytime.
Super fast little tidbit for you. Although, as I said, Hurricane Ian has delayed the January 6th committee hearings from coming back. One thing apparently has gone forward as scheduled, and that is that the House Select Committee investigating the insurrection is interviewing Ginni Thomas today. She arrived at the Capitol flanked by security. Generally, security like that is to protect the individual. In this case, I think it's to protect society. But in any event, she is there. They're going to be talking to her. I was not able to find any word of whether it would actually be televised or whether it would be in a closed session. But I mean, buckle up, because we have no idea what it is that she's going to either reveal or baselessly claim. But whatever it is probably going to be bananas. Anyway, yeah, with that said. Continue.
No, I still do not understand how the wife of a Supreme Court justice is this intermeshed in this nightmare.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. 100%.
Well, some of you might be thinking, okay, that video was crazy, John, but why are you focused on the past? What about the future? Well, let's turn to some crazy predictions about the future, starting with this video.
90% of the departments of whatever. Just lock them up. You know, states' rights. Did you know that a governor can declare war? Governor can declare war, okay? And we're gonna probably see that.
That is Michael Flynn, who was the national security advisor to the former president Donald Trump, which is very crazy when you think about it. It's crazy even if you don't think about it, but spare a little bit of thought, because he could be in our government again following 2024. We know that Trump feels a lot of loyalty for this guy who has spent the past couple of years, after all of his legal troubles that he brought onto himself, just routinely threatening mass violence. And there you have him not only saying that states can declare war, but that they soon will declare war, presumably on other states. Now, to be very clear, he's like 90% wrong there. According to the Constitution, no state shall blah, 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 a bunch of stuff engage in war unless actually invaded or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay. So that's, I guess, the facts. I don't think that's going to stop him or his ideological allies. But Caroline, what exactly would be the justification for one state to invade another state? I know we're gonna have to put ourselves mentally into the mind of Michael Flynn, but what do you think he's getting at there?
I have no idea. All that I can think is that, I don't know, there's like this tendency, you know, in politics, just in general, it's sort of widely known historically that you know, if you have no policies to run on, no material interests for your people, like you just need to sow discord and basically like start a war kind of. And like I think that people like Michael Flynn, who have absolutely no interest, let's be clear, in helping the American people in any way, even like Republicans who love him, like they have no interest in delivering for these people on policy. All they can think of is in terms of violence. And you know, we see it in these videos that keep emerging. And it really just is this escalating cycle of getting closer and closer to these people's like dreams of going to war. It's very weird, again, talking about you know, the J.R. Majewski, the rapper MAGA Congress member, who is like obsessed with this idea of war and this idea of the Air Force and the military, but completely not understanding how many people are involved in the armed forces and how many of them will never see glory. They will see murder, or they will see like logistics. So it's a profound misunderstanding of the material lives of most Americans. But I think it's really what these people, it's the only strategy in their tool belt to get support is just whipping people into a frenzy and scaring them, frankly.
Yeah, 100%. And you're right, they are obsessed. They're obsessed with this mythical concept of war, as they are obsessed with many mythical things that never actually existed. And to the extent that they existed, they sucked even at that point. But they're also obsessed with some justification, any justification. Give me a justification to start killing people that disagree with me. And so what would be the cause of this war? I don't know. I don't think he knows. But what he knows and what his audience knows is, so we can kill the libs. At that point, that would be the justification to start killing the libs. And that's why they obsess over it. And I wanna be clear about one thing, because there is a danger, I think. Like, we have an ethical duty to let you know that people in the Trump orbit are threatening civil war. Not metaphorically, not hinting, saying states are going to invade states. Because then it might make you think, oh, so there is this dangerous potential thing. An actual civil war, or an actual overthrow of the government, or with QAnon, the actual storm happening. So let's not let that happen. And I agree, we can't let that happen. But let's also not fall into the trap of thinking that we've only failed and they've only succeeded if that crazy line is crossed. Michael Flynn doesn't talk about this war only because he wants this war, in the same way that the QAnon, the people leading the QAnon thing, don't talk about the storm because they actually think it's going to happen. When you get people to process and think about politics in these terms, you can win without ever accomplishing your stated goal. You don't necessarily need a full-on successful coup or a full-on successful civil war to have accomplished your actual goals, which are break down the ability of the American people to think rationally about politics, to choose leaders that have their interests at heart, to see those who disagree with them as people they disagree with rather than satanic pedophiles that deserve to be put to the sword. And even if we never get to that war, even if the great storm never comes, look at how much damage has been done to our ability to exist as a body politic, to talk to one another. Look at how many voter suppression laws have already been passed. How many people have been hounded at student board meetings and things like that. They are succeeding in their mission, even if the craziest part of it never actually comes to pass. So let's be aware not only of the scariest part of this, but the full breadth of the war that's being waged on us. Any other thoughts?
No, that was an incredible, analysis. And I think just quickly, I think wrapping up, like, we will see this in our next segment about this division in society that starts from the top and goes all the way down. When we talk about even things like natural disasters that should have be largely moments for Americans to come together in a sense of unity and trying to protect each other and care about each other and with mutual aid and things like that. But we can see this discourse starts from this, very bombastic talking about war and invasions and civil strife. And it completely plays down into things that should absolutely have bipartisan support on, like things like dealing with natural disasters and climate change and et cetera. And we will get into all of that.
I agree. Okay, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back though, there is obviously a hurricane continuing to batter the East Coast of the US. We're gonna give you a couple of the weirdest takes on it after this. Apologies to those watching, especially those listening on the podcast. I have no idea why my voice is degrading so rapidly. I don't think I'm sick, it's just going away. But the news continues, starting with this.
Saw what happened in Cuba. I mean, the entire island is completely out of power. And it gives you, you feel terrible for people in Puerto Rico who were just hit and Cuba who were just hit. Thank God we have better infrastructure in our country. We've put a lot of investment into making sure that we're ready for these things. But it's an act of nature and you never know exactly what to expect.
Okay, so I don't know if you caught that little thing there from Martha McCollum in her analysis for Hurricane Ian, but Puerto Rico is part of our country. And I don't know how many times that needs to be reiterated. It's true today. It's going to be true tomorrow. In a year, it's probably going to be true. You can just go forward assuming that it is not a foreign country. It's part of the United States. Now, maybe, Caroline, I'm being too harsh. It is possible that there, maybe she meant just the Cuba part, even though she listed both before she said in our country. Maybe she means continentally. She means part of our contiguous country. Am I being unreasonable?
There is no way that woman knows that Puerto Rico is a part of the United States. And it's like this happens every time. Like every time there is a hurricane or a natural disaster in Puerto Rico, it's like so much of our time is spent reminding people, especially people on the right, that no, this is on us as well. Like, yeah, the reason they don't have good infrastructure is our fault. Like we spend so much time having that conversation and having to reiterate that, that so little time can actually be spent acknowledging like what the particular challenges are of having Puerto Rico as a US territory, how it differs from the mainland United States. I mean, just I think the theme of the day is like just conversations that need to happen about making people's lives better just cannot, because the level of discourse from like, you know, left and right side of just cable news is like completely missing key facts that they need to understand.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And you know, everybody's gonna react to it a little bit differently. Like I try, despite I'm sure right now on YouTube there's some Trump fan saying that I have derangement syndrome and I'm totally unfair to the right. I'm trying to extend understanding, like bearing in mind that Martha McCollum was in that thing where she seemed to not get that Puerto Rico was part of the US. She was expressing concern for the people there. She didn't seem to want them to be suffering, so that's good. It's not a high bar. If that bar was in Florida, it'd be underwater right now. It's not super high, but she was being, I guess, a little bit compassionate. But this does potentially matter. Not if Martha McCollum gets it, but if people understand the relationship between the US and places like Puerto Rico and other territories and things like that, it does matter, because it becomes a lot easier to simply ignore what happens, especially in times of strife, like with natural disasters. To assert that whatever problems are over there are their problems, it's their debt problem, who cares? To resist just the idea that maybe at some point they might choose to become a voting portion, basically a full on state. Like their visceral opposition to that is partly caused by the fact that they have been trained to think of it as a sort of weird foreign country that kind of hangs around off the coast or something. That's not what it is. And so hopefully she will learn something from this. And going forward, I sort of doubt it. But anyway, by the way, I want to give you the most recent updates. And bear in mind, with a hurricane, things are developing minute by minute. But it was downgraded to a tropical storm earlier today. Still declared a major disaster by President Biden. They will be using this federal aid to help. And I believe that Ron DeSantis has requested for some period, I don't know if it was 60 days or 1 month, that the federal government cover all of the disaster related costs, which that's part of what the federal government is for, is to take care of these sorts of things. And this will be a great opportunity for people like Ron DeSantis and conservatives in Florida to understand that concept, that this is why we need a government, a well-funded government, a capable, competent government, so that when Florida is devastated, they get every bit of help that they need instantly, and that they're not left just relying on Donald Trump to hopefully walk by and huck paper towels at them or something.
Oh my God.
In any event, as of right now, or as of this morning at least, 2.5 million customers in Florida were without power. And so the maximum sustained winds, by the way, had died. It says 65 miles per hour, which is still dangerous. But when it initially made landfall, I was seeing something like 150. So there has been significant progress. But Caroline, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting question. The discussion of how political leaders in states like Texas and Florida are, you know, like 360 days of the year is just constantly railing against if we have a Democratic president, that they, you know, are wasting so much money. And, you know, the same thing happened with Hurricane Sandy when Obama was president. And ultimately, like what kind of happened then, a lot of people speculate that the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, like lost so much respect amongst Republicans when he basically admitted that Obama like did a really good job of coming in quickly and like bringing aid to the situation, which sort of set the pattern of like agree, like having bipartisan again support for relief in natural disasters, like doesn't win political points. And on the left, we obviously do a good job of like stepping past that and acknowledging that like that's okay if you lose political points. But the right just like continues to make it so impossible. You know, they're the ones railing against cancel culture and nobody is proud to be an American anymore. And yet these their leaders are the ones who, in a situation when we could be really brought together, sort of are very hesitant to really put aside their politics and like create that unity. I do think DeSantis has taken a very, you know, a mature approach to this, which should not be surprising, but really is. Like, I'm actually very surprised that he has given, or I don't know, like if giving Biden credit is the right way of saying it, but he, you know, has spent the last few days really, really working with the administration. And it just sucks because we all know in a couple of days or weeks that camaraderie is going to be totally ripped apart because, again, it doesn't score him political points.
Yeah. I also, again, we're always going to be fair and we're never going to get a shred of credit for being fair. But yes, look, I wouldn't say that DeSantis necessarily has given him credit. Maybe he has since and I haven't seen it. I would say he hasn't relentlessly attacked Biden over this, which is something. Yeah. And by the way, he was on, I think, Tucker Carlson last night. And Tucker Carlson was like trying to inspire a bit of drama in the same way that a White House press corps, one reporter, was trying to like bring up the drama to Karine Jean-Pierre, I think it was yesterday. And neither of them were biting it. And so that is good. That is how this should actually work. I agree, the second the ground dries, the knives are coming back out. But this is how it's supposed to work. And so I guess in this instance, DeSantis is marginally more, you know, adult than Donald Trump. A reporter in Florida was covering the hurricane when some eagle-eyed viewers got distracted by something in the frame. It was described initially as a bulbous rubber casing that happened to be on Kyla Gaylor's microphone. In this photo, you can actually see it. And despite the fact that she is broadcasting from a hurricane where damage is being done, it's incredibly dangerous, people noticed that and had an issue with it. So she had to put out a statement saying, it is what you think it is. It's a condom. It helps protect the gear. You can't get these mics wet. There's a lot of wind and a lot of rain. So we gotta do what we gotta do. And that is put a condom on the microphone. And I am very worried in 2022. Like, the right has become so sensitive to any sexual images of any kind, even safe sex, mind you, that I'm a little bit worried about what might happen to her career. But she has nothing to apologize for. She's trying to save expensive equipment while literally risking her life and safety. What do you think?
One thing that this really proves is that there have been dramatic cuts to funding of the arts, because if more of Americans did community theater when they were little, they would know that condoms and microphones are a match made in heaven, and you often put them on to protect from sweat and other sorts of things. So
I had no idea that was a thing. From sweat, like during a vigorous performance?
Or just, I guess so. Like, oftentimes during the summer, if you're doing summer stock, it's really hot. And if you're wearing a microphone, you put that in. And, you know, to be fair, you always do have that moment of laughing. This is so funny. Oh my gosh, let's throw them at each other, whatever. But this is my plea to bring arts back into schools for the youth. we got to get these kids knowing that, you know, condoms are good in the way we all know they are, but also for their a miraculous invention, and we should be celebrating
they
that.
Are.
I'm glad exactly. We're paying, yeah, attention to this.
Well, I mean, we should definitely be celebrating them, you know, at least up until they're outlawed in a number of different red states across America. Mm-hmm. By the way, I do like this. I think, in fact, we could kill two birds with one stone in health class rather than using a banana to demonstrate. Just use a mic and encourage people to get involved in journalism. Anyway, exactly. By the way, someone left a comment. Oh, Dented Head Ed says, would that be protected speech? Anyway, so we're talking about how like people are focusing on this when she's literally in danger. Let's demonstrate the danger that these reporters are in with this next clip.
I just came flying by. All right, you know what? I think I'm just gonna come in here for a second.
Yes, so that is Jim Cantore, a meteorologist at Ground Zero, quite literally when the storm hit. And you can see him being not quite clotheslined. I guess it was too low by a branch. Another branch was even higher. If that had hit him in the head, I don't know what would have happened. But that is a dangerous situation that he should not be in. Why do they keep doing this? We know what a hurricane looks like. They look like a hurricane. You can just, how about this? Let's honor Jim Cantore's bravery there. The next time there's a hurricane, you want to send a meteorologist, just play that video. That's what it looks like when there's a lot of wind. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm on the same page of we get it. Like we get it. We can see the water, we can see cars floating away. Jim, I think that was his name. We love you.
Jim Cantore,
but yeah, no, it's good. I feel I have a lot of empathy for meteorologists though, because like you know that they wait all year for these weather events, like the you know, the couple days that people are really tuned to the Weather Channel. And then it's always like these crazy disastrous conditions. I just feel like they're going from 0 to 100 cannot be good for their health. And although Jim is a hero, I am okay with you reporting from your living room or some, you know, evacuation center in safety. I get it. I'm scared already.
Sure, yeah. By the way, I'm seeing people saying that he's a known faker for the wind. Well, first of all, that seemed like real wind. But no, I Googled it because I wanted to see. There had been these allegations that he was faking the wind in Hurricane Ida because there was a guy in the background of a shot that wasn't being blown over by the wind. But Snopes looked into it. The guy's in an alley. Like, yes, the wind isn't hitting the guy who's not in the wind. But so let's check our facts. Anyway, with that said, I think we can move on to our next story. I think that we have time. So why don't we tee up this awesome speech by Alyssa Slotkin?
There's been a lot of talk on the other side of the aisle, and I want to be clear. No one in this room is in the judicial branch, and no one in this room that I'm aware of is a medical doctor. If you believe that the provisions that the VA has put forward have a legal problem, you have the right to take up that case and put it through the courts. We are the legislative branch. We make laws, we pass laws, we are not judge and jury. Take it to a court if you're concerned. That is your right. In terms of making decisions on behalf of women, if you want to take a veterans bill and make it about abortion, then let's do it. What you are saying, and you're saying in front of the American people, is that you believe a veteran who has been raped, who is the victim of incest, and who is having a dangerous miscarriage does not deserve access to abortion. You are saying, unless you correct me and tell me what you believe a woman deserves to have when she has been raped, the victim of incest, or is in the middle of a dangerous miscarriage, if you can't state it, then be clear. You believe in no exceptions for women, a cold, heartless, violent approach to women's health.
That was Democratic Representative Alyssa Slotkin, who was awesome there. And also she was 100% right there. When the Republicans are trying to block this bill designed to help veterans because they want more draconian anti-abortion aspects of it. Yeah, they need to be called out. That is everything that Alyssa said. It is cruel, it is violent, it is barbaric. The idea that these Republicans who have claimed their entire lives that they back the military and patriotism and all that, that would be perfectly fine with these vets, including female vets, killing people in the line of duty. They'd defend them if they killed them out of the line of duty. They frequently do when it comes to war crimes. But you cannot have control over your own body. You can do the bidding of the American war machine, but you deserve no actual respect, no understanding, no compassion when you come back home. And this is just one, I get a metaphor, but it's one front in the anti-abortion war that's been proceeding throughout this year. They are increasingly emboldened to go against all of these exceptions, even for this group that they've claimed to have so much respect for. Caroline, it's been a little bit since we talked about, there's obviously been a lot of action happening in the topic of abortion around the country the last few months. But what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think you make a really, really interesting point about the connection, like the basis of what we're talking about with these specific abortion conversations are regarding veterans. And on one hand, veterans, it is acknowledged that in the line of duty, they will have to commit violence and use weapons and do a lot of really, really not, great things, especially when it comes to the sanctity of life. And so having this conversation about the right, the right is framing it in the right to life, protecting life at all costs. In this framework of veterans and the armed forces really starts to raise a lot of flags, because whose lives are you actually caring about? The, victims abroad, victims at home, when they come home. It's like, it's these sort of conversations that I think will make a lot of headway for Democrats, is not taking the Republican, it's just pushing them further. I mean, I think time and time again this year, we have seen that Republicans, whether they are, religious pro-lifers or more centrist, they do not have a coherent answer to this. And they are struggling so hard, as it's now finally being on the table, of what the stakes actually are for abortion. And this, Alyssa Slotkin, this line of questioning, I know she also was doing a debate on a local TV channel I saw, and just continually asking the question of, do you have a plan for this person you are claiming to represent? Do you have an answer to them? Because they do not. They know it is wildly unpopular, their stance, and they are shaking in their boots, and you can see it, and we're going to see it in November. But yeah, I think the context of this, talking about it from people who have returned from war zones, is especially fascinating.
100%. Yeah, I'd like to see more of that. Let's have some of them. And I'm sure many are involved in these groups. Okay, with that, the hour is rapidly burning through. So we're gonna take a break. We come back though. The New York Times report on phone calls that were made and intercepted by Russian soldiers during the invasion of Ukraine. It's fascinating stuff. Don't go anywhere.
Алло, привет, мамуль. Мы сейчас, получается, поселок Буча стоим. У нас наступление забуксовало. Мы проигрываем войну.
А так у нас 50% полка уже нету.
Дали приказ убивать каждого, кого видим.
Приезжаю, увольняюсь, нахуй, все, ебалая ферма.
Путин дурак, Киев хочет взять, а у нас это не получится никак.
Those are excerpts from phone calls placed by and intercepted by Russian soldiers operating in Ukraine during the initial weeks and months of the invasion. And the New York Times has actually obtained thousands of call recordings. They say that they have spent literally months verifying the authenticity by cross-referencing Russian telephone numbers with messaging apps and social media platforms, so that they can specifically identify not only that they were Russian soldiers, but which specific Russian soldiers they actually were. They put 2 months into translating and cataloging them, and they are available on the New York Times right now. You heard a couple of different soldiers right there. We're gonna jump into some of the other things that they revealed, because We have often had to get our information from, for instance, the media or the US government or what the Ukrainian government has released, what Russian state TV has been willing to admit. That's all biased information. While I can't personally verify the authenticity of this, the things that they're talking about are things that we know have happened. And so let's jump into some of what they've revealed. You have a soldier identified as Nikita saying, F, there are corpses lying around on the road. Civilians are just lying around. It's effed up. Right on the road? Yes. Everything was effing looted. All the alcohol was effing drunk and all the cash was taken. Everyone is doing it here. So in just a short little bit of a conversation revealing just the routine death of civilians that are just left to rot in the streets while their homes and residences, businesses are looted by the invading force. This, if you've been paying attention to war, should not come as a surprise, but it's important that people understand that this happens and that this is happening. This is what the invasion was like. They're also revealing other things that you might not have expected. One soldier named Sergei says, no one told us we were going to war. They warned us one day before we left. Nikita says, we're all going for training for 2 or 3 days. Fooled like little kids. These bastards didn't tell us anything. And so there is a combination of admitting to either witnessing or participating in war crimes, denouncing Putin or Russia for having no idea what they were doing, for sending them into war without training, with equipment that was not good enough, being lied to about how capable the Ukrainian forces would be. There is a massive amount of resentment and just absolutely shattered morale. Soldiers talking about being ready to either quit their military commission or just head off, just start walking and get out of there while they can. Caroline, it is dramatic stuff.
Yeah, and I think echoing back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of Michael Flynn and this like rabid interest in war, and something you're touching on here is that war has so many lies within it. And I think what these New York Times text messages and audio reveals is something very sad, but also very, I think, positive about our current situation, in that this is absolutely devastating that we are reading these words of Russian soldiers who, again, like they're, you know, supposed to be our enemy. We are supposed to be against them, and we are seeing their response to these horrific situations that they are forced to participate in. So while that is like just incredibly sad and scary, the fact that we in modernity are able to, by the internet, by social media, able to see these voices across the globe who, you know, the powers that be are trying desperately to convince are our enemies. That's how we prohibit this escalation in the future. Of course, it's not easy, and it's probably, you know, in this particular, in the Russian-Ukraine war, you know, it might not even work. But holding on to these examples that this is not for us. It's not for us as Americans. It's not for average Russian people. You can't cover up dissent as you once could. And I think that's the biggest lesson that we have to take from all this. I think right now in particular, where the war is at currently, is such a crucial moment that will quite literally determine like the history of the maybe the rest of our generation as it comes to geopolitics, with the pipeline act leading to massive energy insecurity in Europe. Like it can't be said enough that we are at a tipping point at this moment of, I don't think anyone could have predicted the dire situation that it seems like the Russian army is in. Not only from, yeah, like you said, what we can see as Americans, which is incredibly rare to get like super accurate reporting from either side, but yeah. All we can do is hold on to these examples that this is not a war for the people. War is not for the people. And there's never. No amount of propaganda that should, you know, change our minds about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they seem to get that. And hopefully some of this messaging is getting back through perhaps these phone calls. Someone in the chat I see says, if I were a Russian soldier, I'd be taking out the highest ranking officer I see. Well, so you're saying that obviously we don't support random killings. That we know that that's happening. We know that they are. I mean, that happens in a lot of wars actually, but in this it definitely is. I mean, they were losing generals and officers left and right, and regular soldiers too. I mean, one of the most dramatic things that's been revealed is how many have been killed. One soldier, Nikita, tells his partner that 90 men were killed around him during one ambush. Another, Semyon, estimates that a third of his regiment was killed. Another describes rows of coffins containing the bodies of 400 paratroopers waiting to be returned home from an airport hangar. And I have a feeling that those will not be photographed once they make it back to Russia. I mean, Russia has had, look, the numbers of dead being reported by the Ukrainians for the Russian side, I'm sure are elevated. But the numbers that the Russians are admitting to, of course, are an underestimate. I mean, this has been a massive, needless meat grinder for Russian soldiers who probably the vast majority have no interest in this war. Now, once they get there, if they participate in war crimes, then that should be the end for them. They should be locked up for the rest of their lives. We can perhaps pity that they would not have engaged in this if they hadn't been forced to, perhaps at, you know, pain of imprisonment or death if they didn't participate. But they don't want to be here. They don't want to be doing this. Every single, each of these quotes references an unimaginable tragedy that didn't have to happen, that could end any day. And the only reason it isn't is because Vladimir Putin chooses to continue it. Now, that said, we do have to turn to another aspect of this story. So we have a second video in this same block. Why don't we play that?
Это вызов и попытка создать новую ситуацию, то как могут ответить русские? Задумывается, например, Такер Карлсон. И такие интересные у него выводы. Видимо, где-то вы с ним переписываете в Твиттере там это. Слушаем, Такер Карлсон. По рассуждениях никаких вопросов, кто это подорвал. Потому что в рамках противостояния, которое сейчас происходит, ему совершенно понятно, что он-то знает, что говорил Байден, что говорила Нуланд, что говорила Трасс, что говорил
ведущему Такеру Карлсону, который сказал, что а кто, например, помешает России перерубить интернет-кабель между Лондоном и Нью-Йорком? Можно только подумать и помыслить, какие будут катастрофические последствия для тех же финансовых рынков, ну просто в экономике.
Я думаю, что без ответа оставлять такие действия нельзя. Ну, кабель, да. Почему нет? Можно хотя бы там на сутки вырубить его, этот.
That is excerpts from a number of different shows over the past 24 hours on Russian state TV. They, 201, though, loved Tucker Carlson's commentary on the apparent sabotage of the Nord Stream pipeline, which there are a lot of accusations being thrown against all parties in this, and I have no idea who is responsible. I don't know that we'll ever know, but I will be waiting to find out. Tucker was sure the second he saw it that there is no way that Russia could have done it, and obviously his own country did, which is possible, but he is not declaring it to be a possibility. He's declaring that it happened. The only thing that's an open question in his mind is how Russia should respond, because he does seem to think that a response is merited. He gave specific suggestions like cutting the underseas internet cables. And you can see in those clips, and of course the discussions go on for literally hours, that they not only were listening in Russia, they like his suggestions. Some of the hosts saying, yes, why not a cable? Thank you for that amazing idea of how we should strike back against the United States and the Western world. Caroline, what are your thoughts?
I share your just total like dumbfounded at how anyone could, anyone, especially someone with as big a platform as Tucker Carlson, could risk even planting any of the things that he has when the stakes are so high. And you know, usually like I would say, and the stakes aren't high for you, Tucker Carlson, so you're throwing everyone else under the bus. But nuclear war is a threat to everyone. Absolutely, yeah. Everyone, which is why this is like, does not make any sense to me as to why someone with his platform could possibly be peddling information like this. It's a really scary moment for us right now, for everyone right now.
I agree. I hope we get through without any of those lines being passed, because you can't go back after that. Mm-hmm. Okay, that is unfortunately all the time we have for our first hour. If you're on the podcast, on your platforms, thank you as always for watching, but there's more to come. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.